retired Lieutenant General, professor, and most significantly, Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council. Jerry Boykin has led us in so many different battles over so many decades. Jerry, come on up and take over, will you?
Good morning. I'm going to call to the stage here Kevin Freeman and Major General retired Bob Dees. Bob, where are you?
Right here.
Oh, you're right here behind me. We're going to take the next 50 minutes and talk about national security. So let me start out by saying national security has many components, and we think primarily of the military, but there are other issues associated with national security. Certainly, immigration and our border is a very key issue in terms of national security. Cyber has become a very important issue as well, and Kevin is going to talk about that today. And then the state of our military, Bob Dees is going to talk about, and we all know that if we don't have a strong military, that we really don't have national security at all. I want to remind you that in 1963, a great American stood up in the mess hall at West Point, and he gave a very famous speech there. An old general that had fought in several wars had actually received the Medal of Honor, Douglas MacArthur. And he gave probably his most famous speech, and when he came to the end of his speech, he said something very important that is a lesson for us today, and he looked at the cadets and he said, "Your mission is fixed, determined, inviolable, and it is to fight and win the nation's wars." That has not changed. Unfortunately, the last 7.5 years, we've had a president, a commander-in-chief that does not understand that that's the mission of our military. In fact, he's made it a test bed for social experiments. He's had a very strong agenda that was focused almost exclusively on the LGBT agenda, and as a result, our military has suffered a degradation in readiness. There are other factors as well. Part of it is leadership, part of it is budget cuts, but our military, quite frankly, folks, is not anywhere near where it needs to be today to defend America against the enemies of the state. I will only say one thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to these guys because they are experts in their fields. And that is that we need to be paying attention to our border. Donald Trump has said he is going to build a wall, and I hope indeed that he does. I don't know what it will look like, but when we had the CNP event out in San Diego back in February, I was asked to come up to Los Angeles and to do a leadership seminar for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I went up and spent the better part of a day with deputies within the Sheriff's Department there. And remember, this was not that long after the San Bernardino event. And I pulled some of them aside and I said, "Based on what you saw in that shooting the other day, are you concerned that there are more people like that, more cells like that in California?" And every one of them said, "Those cells are not just in California. They are all over America." "How did they get in?" I said. "Across the southern border." Even the Border Patrol has endorsed Donald Trump because they have been restricted from dealing with what's actually coming across that border. We think of the poor Mexican day worker. But they're finding Korans, prayer rugs, and terrorist training manuals in the little wadis on the American side of the border. And 80% of the people that fall into the category of other than Mexican, which is about 20% of what comes across the border, 80% of them are from the Middle East. We know that they're terrorists. And the Los Angeles County Sheriff's people confirmed that they are coming across our border with nefarious intent. They are setting up cells all over this nation. We need to get in behind Donald Trump and support him in his efforts to seal the border, and that should be a first priority because it is clearly an issue of national security. They are not here for any good reasons. So I urge you to do all that you can to help support this whole idea that we're going to seal the American border and make a sincere effort to do that. Thank you. Now, I'm going to introduce Kevin Freeman, who is, I've known Kevin for a number of years, and Kevin is quite a guy, and I'm going to skip the formal introduction of Kevin to say, if you don't know Kevin by now, as part of the Council for National Policy, this is a guy that is on the leading edge of not only cyber warfare, but he's on the leading edge of what the enemy is doing to try and bring us down, and he will talk about that. So, Kevin, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Well, if you could put the PowerPoint up, that's great. Thank you very much, General Boykin. It's always a pleasure to be with Council for National Policy. I've been a member here since, I think, 1996. What I'm about to share with you, I first introduced to Frank Gaffney when he was on a panel, and I went up and said, I'm very concerned about this issue, and Frank introduced me to the right people in Washington and really helped me get this message out. What I was asked to talk about is what do we do in the first 100 days from a national security perspective, and it's really refreshing because what I'm going to share with you came up during the Obama administration, and I put a lot of effort into educating Washington, and I repeatedly was stopped by people under the Obama administration. The first and most important priority that we can do as a nation is to give God thanks for what he did in the election. There is no greater national security priority than to call upon God, because if we have nothing else but we have God, we will win and be secure. Psalm 107 is something that came up in daily Bible reading the day after the election, and if you haven't read it recently, take a look. Psalm 107 starts off and says, give thanks to the Lord. And then four times in that chapter, it talks about how God's people, they were rescued, and then they turned away from God, and then bad things happened, and they got in distress, and they cried out. And God says, okay, I'll deliver you. And he delivered him four times. But each of the four times it says, oh, that men would give praise to the Lord. Basically, you remember Jesus, and he healed 10 lepers, and one gave thanks, and where are the other nine? If we want to secure our freedom, the most important thing we can do is give thanks and proper praise to the Lord. Now, on a practical matter, we face a very real enemy, and we're already in a war. Most people don't know it. The war is based on a book that is titled Unrestricted Warfare. This is a CIA translation of a Chinese document published in 1999 by the People's Liberation Army. It is a total war strategy. It's not just military. And when I say total war, what I mean is they said, don't worry about what the military strategists say. Don't worry about what the statesmen say. We're going to pattern our warfare after George Soros. And they did this in 1999, well ahead of the curve. The same suspects, the same one. If I said, who are the enemies or adversaries of the United States? You'd tell me Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and ISIS, or Al-Qaeda, or the jihadists, or the Muslim Brotherhood. Yes, it's the same people, same groups, but they're using unusual weapons. Cyber, market crash, currencies, EMP, counterfeiting, subversion, economic espionage, energy, and intellectual property theft. They talk about market manipulation. If they could cause a single man-made stock market crash, they could bring America down. Russia actually echoed this publicly in March of 2014 when we were talking about placing sanctions in response to the Ukrainian invasion. They said, by the way, we can crash your stock market anytime we want to. We'll end your economy. And General Keith Alexander from the NSA at the time admitted on 60 Minutes, yes, there are a handful of foreign nations that could crash our stock market and take down our financial system and ruin the American economy. This is a genuine threat. In The Art of War, another Chinese book on warfare. You have to know your enemy and you have to know yourself. I want to tell you that our enemies know themselves and they know us. But I've spent a lot of time in and out of the Pentagon, the FBI, the DIA, CIA, and so forth, and I will tell you there are very few in Washington and virtually none in the Obama administration who understand that we're at risk, that our economy is at risk, our currency is at risk, our cyber is at risk. These are nation-ending potential events. We don't know it. And the reason we don't know it is because of American arrogance. We assume that our dollar is the world's currency and always will be, that our stock market, everybody wants our stock market to succeed. It's not the truth. Our enemies have adopted a total war strategy. They use kinetic, cyber, economic, political, media resources, everything. And in fact, in this book, they mention that, where they say that the Americans have never taken into consideration and have even refused to consider means of war other than military means. This needs to change. So what do we do about it? Well, we hearken back to President Reagan, like we should in so many areas. Talk to the great men. Roger Robinson was a part of economic warfare strategy that brought down the evil empire. Talk to General Meese. The Reagan team understood total war, and we used these weapons offensively to take down the evil empire. When I went and talked in the Pentagon, I would talk to one group. There are two groups that got it, the Office of Net Assessment and the Defense Intelligence Agency under Mike Flynn, General Flynn. Most of the groups I'd go in there and talk, this is a total war strategy, and they'd say, well, I understand, I've read the book, I agree with you, but that's not in my swimming lanes. We don't deal with that here. The FBI, not in my swimming lanes. I've come to Washington probably 100 times in the last 8 years on my own nickel to try and educate people. I met General Boykin early on in the process, and most people didn't get it. President Reagan got it. Hopefully, President Trump gets it. There are some great men that he's putting in place. I know General Flynn. He brought me into the Defense Intelligence Agency a couple of times to talk to the people about the risks that we see. He understands. I was talking with Rich Higgins, the guy that hired me into the Pentagon initially. He's working with General Flynn. And I'll tell you, the truth is they understand this is a total war. It includes our borders. It includes all of these areas. I've only met Congressman Pompeo once. We spoke on a cyber panel at CPAC together, and I've never met Senator Sessions, but I know good things about him. I believe personnel is policy. I learned that from Richard Viguerie. I believe so far we have reason for optimism. So what do we do in the first 100 days? We need a total war strategy. We need to have an understanding that it's cyber, but not just cyber. Now, there are some things that we need to know. Number one, it's not a matter of if, it is a matter of when we suffer a serious cyber attack. You know, the administration didn't seem to worry about cyber really very much at all until the DNC was hacked. And then all of a sudden, oh, don't trust, oh, it's a big problem. You know, in the Constitution, there is a provision in Article 1, Section 8 called Letters of Mark and Reprisal. That was put in the Constitution so that we could take back stuff pirates had stolen from us and so forth. Congress has this power. We could apply that in a cyber castle doctrine, and we could use that offensively to go back and take back things that have been taken from us. We have the ability to do that under the law. We need to build a full legal framework, but that's something we can do constitutionally. That's one area that we need to be aggressive in. Second area is we need to do cyber civil defense. How many of you remember when you were in grade school, we had civil defense training and we'd hide our heads and all that. We'd get under the desks and so forth. We used to have a very good civil defense training. We don't have that anymore, but we need a cyber civil defense. You know, people are all the time exposing their computer to serious hack problems that then can be used to hack other computers, including the government. It was probably a flash drive that somebody at the DNC walked in with, and somebody walked out with all their emails. We need to train that. Joe Schmitz, the former Inspector General of the Pentagon, set up an idea using the state guards to train the populace of the United States on how do you protect your computer. That's a legitimate function of government and something we ought to be doing. We ought to train people. 80% of cyber problems are caused by poor cyber hygiene. And then we need to build up our critical infrastructure, and we need to find a way to reverse the bad Obama decisions like giving away ICANN, which is the domain name registration organization. So this is a chart from GWU put out an active defense report. I recommend it as reading. You can look it up, GWU CCHS active defense report. It talks about how we can hack back and do it legally. In regard to the stock market, how many people here own stocks? How many people here have stock certificates that you own? Who owns the stocks? Actually, legally, you don't own them. The Depository Trust Clearing Corporation has them, and you have a piece of paper or you have an electronic mention that says you may have access or control over that stock. But it's a messy legal framework. It's built on the old bicycle jobbers running stock certificates from one brokerage firm to another, and it's terrible. It has no idea of what stock certificates are real and which ones are fake. It's really messed up. If we do an infrastructure program, that's an area we need improved infrastructure in. We can adopt modern technology and make it so our stock market cannot be crashed by foreign interests. In regard to the economy, the Trump team has talked about infrastructure. They've talked about if we do that, it needs to be economic. It needs to be private sector. It needs to be make sense. So I asked at the panel yesterday of Larry Kudlow and Steve Moore and George Gilder, you know, what do we do here? And they gave good, sensible answers. Here's the real truth. A strong economy is not one that can be taken down in a war strategy. So what do we need to do? Roll back regulation, cut taxes, and open federal lands given to the states. It's a good conservative agenda because it strengthens us and it prepares us to win in an economic war. Here's a problem. How many people here have Android phones? You know, Androids, some of them are sending data back to China. How many people have ThinkPad computers that used to be made by IBM, now made by Lenovo? They were throughout the Pentagon and they found spyware that was sending information back out of the Chinese-made computer back to China. This is a problem. In regard to intellectual property theft, we need to kick the Chinese lobbyists out, and we need to get a proper patent reform. We need to demand reciprocity from the Chinese regarding patent protection. Keith Alexander said, cyber IP theft is the greatest transfer of wealth in history. I was a part of a Center for Security Policy book, Warning Order, and we found that $5 trillion has been stolen from America by intellectual property theft. It's cut our GDP by maybe 2% per year. What do we do in regard to the global financial system? We need to recognize that it will change at some point. Now, George Gilder yesterday said, it changes every 30 or 40 years. We need to go back to a gold standard. I don't know what the answer is, but I know that it will change, and we need to be ahead of the change and preparing for it. There's a threat to the US dollar by China and Russia that we need to take seriously. In fact, Igor Panarin, a KGB buddy of Vladimir Putin, said in 1998, we'll beat America, and the way we'll do it is China and Russia will work together to destroy the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Now, the Chinese ignored him as recently as 2008 when they refused to help take down the dollar in the stock market crash. But in 2013, they switched their position, and it became the official position of China to destroy the dollar as the key reserve currency and to replace it with a basket of currencies, including the Chinese yuan. And if you'll look at a chart of long-term treasury purchases by foreign banks, in 2013, that's when it peaked, and it's been going down ever since. So in the first 100 days, we need a comprehensive study of total war challenges. I did a study like this for the state of Utah that I published in January 2016. What are the financial risks, economic risks to Utah? We need to do that for the United States of America. This is their plan. The attacking side musters large amounts of capital, launches a sneak attack against financial markets, buries computer viruses and hacker detachments, takes out the civilian electricity network, and watches the enemy nation fall into social panic, street riots, and a political crisis. When I brought this to the Pentagon in 2009, they laughed at me and said we were too stable to have street riots like this. So I've spent the last 8 years trying to wake up America as to these risks. I've been on every program I can imagine, and most people have just, it's glossed over their heads. So what we determined to do is we determined to take it down to the individual person level and say, this national security risk can hit your wallet. And I'm pleased to announce that starting probably in January, the Blaze is going to do an hour-long Friday evening primetime program titled Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. So I'll have a weekly show to take this information to the American people. So we wrote a book, thank you, eight steps to restore America to greatness. We wrote a book titled Game Plan, and it had these eight steps published by Regnery, and I'm pleased to announce that people on the Trump team have followed through on all of the other eight, all of those eight steps. So this is our opportunity to help make America great again. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much, Kevin. Our next speaker, and it's kind of interesting, Sebastian Gorka was supposed to be with us today, and he called me last night about 7:30 and said he had to meet with some very important people today. So I said, Sebastian, if this might result in you being in a very strategic position in the future, I think we're going to let you out of this. So I turned to my old friend, Major General retired Bob Dees, and I said, warning order there, soldier. You're up tomorrow. And like all old soldiers, he said, Roger, I'll be there. And so I didn't give him much preparation time, but Bob is an old friend. West Point graduate, 31 years in the U.S. military, achieved the rank of Major General. When he retired, he actually did ministry. He was with a major corporation. He's with Liberty University today, and he's working on the American Resilience Campaign. And if you haven't read his books on resilience, they're very good and very helpful. So would you welcome Major General retired Bob Dees.
Well, Kevin, that was great, and it's great to be in the foxhole with Jerry Boykin. Kevin, I'm going to spin off. I like the way you started off with a spiritual emphasis at the first. And in the book of Psalms, it says, what can the righteous do if the foundations are being destroyed? Isn't that a question? We see our infrastructures, our foundations of America being destroyed before our very eyes, particularly the last 8 years. Physical infrastructure, moral, spiritual infrastructure, military infrastructure, and all of that is a threat to our national security. And then secondly, you thought when David, the warrior, was confronted with a threat to national security, what did he do? He went with his little armament and his little strength, and he pointed a finger at that giant Goliath, and he said, how dare this uncircumcised Philistine defy the armies of the living God? Isn't that true? He was indignant. Christ was indignant when he turned over the tables of the money changers. And I would offer that all of us are indignant about what we see happening to our country. And we're joyful because we now have a second chance. So let's give that a round of applause, okay? Yeah. Kevin, I applaud your expertise and your constancy under ignominy within this administration. So good for you. I applaud that.
Got a West Point word.
Yeah, that's a 50 cent. I'll tell General Boykin what that means here in a bit. The only thing I would add to what Kevin said about cyber hygiene, like any hygiene, it must begin with our youth. All of those in the audience, probably many, did the duck and cover exercises in the 1960s, which he alluded to, the civil defense drills. What are the duck and cover exercises for the children of today in the information age? I would offer that the cyber hygiene has got to start in our school system. It's got to become an ethic. The greatest threat, I was the director of our nation's first cyber war exercise in 1997, something called Eligible Receiver. The greatest threat we found was not the people attacking us from the outside, although that's very serious. It was the unwitting insider, the person who inadvertently left the door open, so to speak, and making us very vulnerable. We found that in our electrical grid system, where the electrical grid operators had economic disincentive to doing the right thing, and so they left the ports open. They didn't close them, harden them, and so people could walk in at random and hack our electrical grid system. we fixed that one, but there's 1,000 other problems we've got to fix, and so I applaud you, Kevin, on that. I want to gain a bit of altitude, talk about national security from a broad perspective, and then I'll get down into the trees, and then I look forward to question and answers as well. From a broad perspective, leadership makes a difference. It's already been said that personnel is policy, and we recognize that. I likewise applaud the picks that have been made thus far by the Trump administration. Mike Flynn was a muddy boots soldier, combat arms, before he became an intelligence officer. He has the broader perspective than any intelligence officer I know, both with respect to the military and with respect to the world. So he will do well for us. Secondly, Mike Pompeo, obviously I applaud him as a former West Point, as a West Point graduate, and all that he's done on the House Intel Committee, et cetera. He's a good man. Finally, Senator Flowers is a good man, and Sessions is a good man, and I applaud his nomination because I am prayerful that one of his first acts in the first 100 days is to press restart on the Holy Land Foundation trial that Eric Holder stopped when he became Attorney General, and then when he pursued a very secular progressive agenda within that department. So we have, I think, good news on the horizon with those appointments and others to come. Kevin talked about total war. National security is not about just the military, although that's a critical element. It's about mobilizing all elements of national power on behalf of our national objectives. And so that's what our national security team really needs to do. I think that our moral, spiritual infrastructure, as I alluded to earlier, is every bit as important as our physical infrastructure, as our military infrastructure. Just a moment about that. Napoleon said, the moral is to the physical as 3 is to 1. Looking at it another way, the will of a nation is far more important than even the skill, the competencies of a nation. And over the last 8 years, the most serious thing that I've been concerned about is the will of the people to encounter adversity, to get better, stronger, wiser through that. And when we see the pro-Hillary tantrums on the streets of America today, that only validates the proposition that we've lost a lot of true grit in our nation. The youth that are rioting on the streets of America today, 60 years before, were going across the beaches of Normandy. Now, what's wrong with that picture? And so how do we as a nation rebuild this resilience individually, in our leadership, and then nationally? I would offer that we face a perfect storm economically, militarily, internationally, domestically, and despite the election of Donald Trump, we have some dark storm clouds, we have some rough waves ahead, and America and Americans are going to need resilience like never before. And so that's what I'm committed to, is helping America become more resilient. Kevin talked about the threats. I use an expression that says, threat clears a man's head and woman's. And isn't that true? A near miss, an auto accident, whatever it is, clears a person's head. And we as Americans today ought to be very clear-headed. We face daunting threats. Yes, the jihadists, the radical Islamic terrorism, an emergent China, a resurgent Russia, the whole specter of counterproliferation, nuclear weapons, need for missile defense, all those things. And then finally, I would say the new weapon of mass destruction that Kevin highlights, which is cyber and the things related to that. So we do face some daunting threats, and our integration of all the elements of national power is very important. Let me dive in a minute to the military. First, deterrence is our objective. Peace through strength is our objective. If you carry a big stick, you can walk softly, wisely through the international community. And so, ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure, a strong military will keep us from having to fight all these marginal battles where we may win, we may lose, we'll take a beating in the process. We don't want that. We don't want any close decisions as we put our military men and women in harm's way. We've got to win, and we've got to win decisively when, in fact, we decide to fight. To do that, we're going to have to do some things. I would offer that it takes, picture yourself with a crystal vase here. If you drop the crystal vase, it takes about 3 seconds to smash it into pieces. Now, how long does it take to put that crystal vase back together? All this micro putting it back together, the surgery of fixing what was broken. Regrettably, the Obama administration has broken a lot of things over these past 8 years. And regrettably, it can't be fixed overnight. It's going to take patience. It's going to take sustained resourcing to get back to where we want to go. So it takes days and months to break a military. It takes months, years, decades to fix it. And so we're about that. Also, you have to recognize the rate of absorption is awful important. You can cut the Marines by a few battalions immediately, but to get those battalions back, you now have a whole pipeline of finding the right people, training the right people, giving them the right ethic, giving them the specific mission competencies. And that, again, makes the point it's an extended process. So how do we fix our military? First step, we got to get our force structure right. We have 10 pounds of mission in a 5-pound bag of manning. And that manning has to do with Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. It's not a parochial thing. You go across the board and all of them are at the lowest ebb, and you've heard all the statistics perhaps since World War II or this or that, and we can discuss the nitty-gritty if you want about what those objectives ought to be in the force structure. The answer is yes, we must increase our manning levels, because we've been asking our troops and their families, we've been riding them hard and we've put them away wet, and it not only results in the challenges, the normal challenges of that tempo to families, but we've also been wrestling with our mental and behavioral health issues in the military. They're great Americans, they're doing everything on our behalf, and yet we understand that we've been asking way too much of them. Secondly, I would offer force readiness is important. You know, the Chinese say you sweat in peace so you will not bleed in war. Well, we got to sweat in peace a lot more in terms of our readiness of our people, our equipment, and then the integration of that into mission capabilities. The hardest part, as I mentioned, is our people. It takes a short time to furlough an infantry captain. It takes 8 to 10 years to train that same infantry captain to get a new one, train him to be a competent combat commander. Modernization is another thing we must do with our force. When we talk about modernizing, the point is, we modernize our equipment. We know we need to do that. The folks flying the B-52s are flying an airplane that's older than their fathers. The folks driving the M1 tanks, driving our vehicles in our Navy ships, you just look across the board, it's antiquated, and I don't sleep very well at night understanding the lack of modernization in our nuclear forces and all that that means. So there's a lot of these problems that have been under the water level that we got to bring into the light of day, and it's going to be ugly, but we've got to do the hard work of modernizing our military forces. It's going to cost, and there's going to be trade-offs, but I think there's plenty of hunting for those trade-offs within the social programs of the existing Obama administration. I'm going to land the plane here, but let me just mention a final story. Normandy, 1944. What if on that day those veterans had said, it's too windy, it's too wet, I think we'll go tomorrow. A little uncomfortable today, we'll go tomorrow. And yet they didn't say that, nor did they say that at Iwo Jima, nor did they say that at Valley Forge in the founding of this nation. They went, they gave themselves, they signed their whole life over to the United States of America and to each one of us. And so some might be tempted to say, well, where would we be without our veterans? Where would we be without our military and their families that put steel in the backbone of our fighting men and women? Well, gratefully, we don't have to ask that question. Gratefully, our veterans have always been there, and now it's up to us. They have dug deep. They have given everything they had. Now we need to give everything we have, not only to support them, to honor them, but also to equip them properly so that we don't unnecessarily put them in harm's way. We must set the conditions for success of any military venture that we think is appropriate to engage in around this world. Look forward to your questions and answers. God bless you. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'm going to say something here that I said in a meeting a couple of days ago right here in this room, and that is, you can restore the budget, you can focus on all of these things, but there is one thing that has to be done first, and it has to be done in the first 100 days, and that is, you've got to get leadership in our military today. Both civilian and uniform, you've got to get leadership in there. And the leaders that are in our military today are compromised. And they're compromised because everybody in the ranks has watched them go on television and say, we can absorb these budget cuts. We can allow transgenders to serve openly in the military. We can put women in the infantry. And everybody below those leaders knows that they don't really believe that. So what does that do? It compromises them. Now we have a generation of leaders that, and I want you to think about this, people that have come out of the West Point and the Naval Academy and the Air Force Academy, young officers, that the only commander-in-chief they've ever known was Barack Obama, and the only leadership they've ever seen has been careerist. What do we have to do? We have to get new leadership in our military, and we have to restore the warrior ethos. Until we restore the warrior ethos and we get back to a focus on what the mission of our military really is, and we stop all the nonsense that is going on in our military today, we're not going to have a robust military that can meet the needs of this nation in the future. But if we get new leadership in and we restore the warrior ethos, where we make them understand you have a single mission, that's to win the nation's wars. And then we develop leaders that are focused on winning wars and not on all these social experiments and this nonsense that has degraded our military. Now I want you to think about this. And if you were with us in Cleveland this summer, I think you will remember that I showed two videos. For those of you who were not there, I want to remind you of what those videos were that I showed. In 1966, Jeremiah Denton, a Naval Academy graduate, was shot down over Hanoi. He was one of the early shootdowns. They wanted him against the Geneva Convention. They wanted him to make a video that they could use for propaganda purposes. Jeremiah Denton refused to do so. And by the way, for you younger people, Jeremiah Denton eventually became a senator from Alabama. Jeremiah Denton refused to do it. They tortured him for 10 months. 10 months they tortured him mercilessly until he finally relented and said, I'll go on camera. When he came out, and you can find this on YouTube, when Jeremiah Denton came out with his POW pajamas on and sat down in a chair and looked into the camera, he said, I don't know my nation's policies anymore, but I still support them. 10 months of torture, and he came out and made that statement. But the whole time he was speaking, his eyes were blinking, and his wife said to an intel analyst, what's wrong with his eyes? And the intel analyst said, he's blinking Morse code and he's blinking the word torture. He was recognized for gallantry after the war, after he was released. But now go to January of 2016. Two patrol boats are taken off the coast of Iran. They're commanded by a Naval Academy graduate, 2011. And within 3 hours, he's looking in the camera and he's saying, this is all our fault, and we want to apologize to the Iranians. And we want to thank them for their hospitality. You tell me what's happened to our military between 1967 in 2016. Is that the warrior ethos? Do you think our enemies fear us with that kind of stuff? But let me tell you, I'll guarantee you none of the members of that crew ever missed a single class on diversity, tolerance, sexual harassment, white privilege, or any of those things that come with every social program. This is what you got to understand. When you implement a new social program, there's a training package that goes with that. And Bob and I can both tell you it's the most frustrating thing, because you wind up sitting your troops down in a classroom, listening to, in most cases, to some pencil neck, given the party line on these social programs. And I guarantee you, none of those sailors that were sent into harm's way, who never got code of conduct training, they never missed one of these classes that were associated with these social programs. And that is because their commander's efficiency report was dependent upon 100% participation. What have we done to our military, and how do you restore it? You restore it by restoring the warrior ethos. If you have a question, raise your hand, and we will see what your questions are rather than me asking these guys questions. Who has a question? I know, I got 5 minutes. Don't point at that thing again. That aggravates me.
Kevin
I'm
Freeman.
I'm going to 12:30. You know, you gave Tony all of 2 hours, and then you give me 15 minutes. No, Gabe, go ahead.
Gabe Joseph with Freeds. I have a question about, everybody knows that the Yahoo hack had 500 million emails that were hacked, and we read a lot of articles about John Podesta's Gmail account. So if they were able to get to John Podesta's Gmail account, and they were able to get to the Yahoo 500 million efforts, what's keeping them, whoever them are, from getting to everybody else's Gmail account and from us hearing about it?
Kevin?
John Podesta's email account was, I'm 95% certain, hacked because his password was password.
Unwitting insider.
It is cyber hygiene. It really genuinely is. And here's the worst. They have our Facebook accounts, social media access. They've hacked Anthem, which is the Blue Cross of California, which tells you who all your relatives and all your medical history. You can take an algorithm and you can figure out just about anyone's password if you can access their social media. So it really is a matter of education and training, because we live in a very dangerous world. But Podesta was just being really stupid.
Right here.
I've really enjoyed all of your presentations. Thank you so much. My comments are for Kevin. It's really a form of a question. So my brother-in-law worked for Lieutenant General Flynn at DIA, and so he's really into the cyber area. And he mentioned something to me about a month to 6 weeks ago that alarmed me. Here in Northern Virginia, we're probably becoming the cloud computing region of the nation. And he said, you would be shocked, he said, the number of Russian spies that are in this region, and the servers that are being installed in those cloud computing facilities are built in China. And so what you were talking about being built in, I hadn't heard you mention that, but it so shocked me. I live in Ashburn, Virginia, which is just 20 minutes from here, 30 minutes from here, and we probably have 60 to 70 cloud computing facilities there in the tens of billions of dollars. And I just wanted to bring that up, and I'm curious your perspective on that. He said the lack of security, these things are being built so fast right now, there's no intelligence officers overseeing any of this. He said there's no one controlling the site perimeter coming in the evening, and I just was kind of appalled by all that. So,
thank you. Let's go to Art.
Right here?
Oh, I'm sorry, right here.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're down to two. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Just quickly, the Chinese have adopted a very strict cyber control policy supported by Alibaba, which is a Chinese company that IPO'd on the U.S. stock exchange for $25 billion. We gave them $25 billion of our money. They're buying up Silicon Valley and Hollywood with that money. They get it and we don't. That's the problem, and we need to have a total war strategy, and that will fix that.
Okay.
Thank you, all three of you. This was fascinating and true. And I would like to ask you, Bob Dees, about international religious freedom issues with the Trump administration, how you think maybe that can be emphasized for persecuted Christians.
Yeah. Thanks, Ellen. I think the answer is yes. We must emphasize that. Our soldiers often are the first ones to see these violations of religious freedom around the world. Our soldiers are the ones that are most acquainted with the Yazidis in Iraq, etc. So what's happening all around the world, our soldiers are the ones undercovering the mass graves near Mosul. So the point is our Department of Defense often encounters some of this first. With a change in climate, such as General Boykin has talked about and other things within the Department of Defense, to go from a restrictive religious freedom environment, at least to a permissive one and even beyond, that is going to have ripple effects not only within the military, the national security apparatus, but across the issues you discuss as well.
Yeah. Okay, Art.
Mine's real quick, General. Are you now ready to reenlist?
Let me tell you, if I could start over again, I would be glad to do so. It would be wonderful, because I'm so much wiser now than I was before. But just so everybody knows, I will not go through a confirmation hearing. I have totally declined. I'm not going to do that. The Democrats would have a field day with me. We got 58 seconds.
General Boykin.
These time Nazis here.
Okay, time Nazis. Kevin and General Dees, the power grid. We've heard for about the last 7-8 years from James Woolsey and others that we need to reinforce our power grid. Second part of it, I understand from a high-level IT guy that the Russians are in our power grid now. For nefarious reasons, the Chinese are also, but to receive some of the technology that they can receive through the power grid. So what can we do to reinforce our power grid?
I'll have to ask you to give a short answer.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't get in trouble.
We need to bake in grid hardening into our new infrastructure projects that Donald Trump is talking about. I'll leave it at that. Kevin, you're short as well.
If from a cyber standpoint, ISIS is hacking the grid every day as well. This is something the Obama administration's ignored entirely, and we have to address it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, and how was that? We hit it right on the money. Thank you all.